Fern Britain, and when I'm in Northern Ireland, I love to listen to flamboyantly fabulous Marcus Hunter Neal on BBC Radio Ulster.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to my lovely self, Marcus Hunter Neal, here on BBC Radio Ulster and BBC Radio Foyle. And I am so lucky because I'm about to start chatting to Barbara Taylor Bradford, OBE. She's a British American, a world best selling author. Her first book sold over 32 million copies, and she's ranked basically as one of the best writers in the entire world. And I'm lucky to get speaking to her. Hello, Barbara.
Hello, Marcus.
This is wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat with me.
Well, I'm so glad you can have me on the show. Forgive the way I sound. I managed to come home to England and caught a cold. Well, so there you are.
So tell me a little bit about your new book. It's the third. It's a trilogy.
Yes, it's the third book. Now there's going to be a fourth book next year because of the demand, I suppose. People happen to like this series, which started with the first book, Cavendon Hall, in 1913, mm-hmm. just before the war years. And then there was the middle book called The Cavendon Women. And now the third, The Cavendon Luck, and that starts in 1938 and ends in 1945, just after VE Day. So I've really told a story that's covered quite a lot of years in two families, the Inghams and the Swans. And I must say that as I did my research, Marcus, I could not believe how truly brave and courageous ordinary people were.
Yes, of course. Well, I suppose it goes back to even the Queen Mother getting out and walking through the rubble of the London Blitz.
That's right, and I have that in the book. And Churchill also, with his big hat and cigar, walking through the rubble as well, with tears in his eyes when he saw how the East End, the Docklands, had been so totally flattened by the Luftwaffe.
I think sometimes society as a whole can be selfish on a one-on-one, but when tragedy strikes, that's when you sort of find humanity really pulls together, don't they?
I absolutely agree with you on that. I think that when it's something that is massive, like the Second World War, men are dying and people are dying all over, everybody tries to pull together and tries to comfort people who have lost loved ones and help out. And the women were marvellous, you know, in that period of time. They were in the munitions factories. They were working on the land. They were, the women's institutes were making jam and bottled fruit and making allotments and growing food. It was a time of a great unity, which of course seems to have disappeared these days.
Well, it's because everybody can order whatever they want now on their smartphones, can't they?
That's right.
So these books actually came about because the sad passing of your longtime typist, and you found a manuscript in the drawers.
Oh, it wasn't actually a manuscript. It was an outline, but it was rather a long outline. It was 50 pages. Yeah. And I did eventually find a copy of it at home. But when we discovered that the reason she hadn't called me back, my assistant and I went up to see her relatives because they told us she had actually died of asthma,
can
believe that.
Oh, my goodness.
And she was having an attack and did make a phone call. When the police got there, she was still alive and they took her to hospital and then she subsequently died. So I went with my assistants a few days later because I knew she had part of the book that I was writing still in her computer. So we went to pay a condolence call, and my assistant went on to her computer and not only found the chapters that I'd been waiting for of the whatever that book was that I was writing a few years ago, but he also came to me and said, there's quite a lot of other stuff. And it was the outline for the cover Clavendon series.
So let's go back to the late 70s. What made you sit down and write the book of a rags to riches story? Were you sort of thinking, oh, this could be me someday? Or how did a woman of substance actually come about?
You know, I was actually living in New York.
Okay.
I had got married to Bob Bradford and moved to America. And I'd been a journalist in America for quite a long time. We lived in New York and California. And one day I said to myself, and the book came out in 79, so it must have been about 1976. And I thought to myself, here am I, still a journalist, and I've always wanted to write a novel, and I've started some and never finished them. I really must do it,
mm-hmm.
because I don't want to be regretful 20 years from now that I hadn't tried. And so I had an idea about a woman from nowhere and nothing becoming a great tycoon. And I thought, oh, that's not very interesting. And then I thought, but what if she became a great tycoon at the turn of the century when women weren't really out there doing that? And that was the birth of Emma Hart.
Yeah.
And the Hart department stores, which everybody thinks that the store is Harrods. And I set it there. I stole the location, but not the store. And it was just one of those analysing about what am I going to do with my career? I don't want to remain a journalist forever. And getting the idea of a woman who goes from nothing to something.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore. And I know too much to go back and pretend. 'Cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor. No one's ever gonna keep me down again. Whoa, yes, I'm wise, but it's wisdom for the pain. Yes, I paid the price, but look how much I gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong,
strong.
I am invincible,
invincible.
I am woman.
And did you think when you were typing it, like as you were writing it and reading it back, did you think, my world is going to change forever? Were you aware of how big it was going to be, or were you just happy with it and hope for the best?
Well, I didn't think anybody. Well, I certainly didn't think of anything like that. I just knew that the book had been bought on an outline and three chapters, and that this, and I signed a contract, and this was not one I couldn't finish. All I kept worrying about was finishing it.
Yes.
And I had my moments, you know, when I felt I couldn't go on, that I needed help. And I had a good editor at Doubleday in New York, and she kept volunteering to help me, and I said no, because you might not be my editor on a second book. And I didn't want to be dependent on anybody. I knew I had to do it myself, Marcus, and I struggled through, and I never thought it would be a bestseller. My only thought was, I must finish this book. And I did. And of course, it was far too long. It was like 1,350 pages, and we had to cut a lot, and too many characters, and it weighed, by the way, 15.5 pounds.
Okay.
So when I took it to my editor, it was in two shopping bags, and she said, I hope that's two copies. And I said, I'm afraid not, it's one.
Just hearing you speak there about how you wanted to do it yourself, what's very interesting is a lot of your female leads are strong, independent women. But do you think that you were maybe the birth of kind of new age feminists, not the dowdy feminists, but the one who put lipstick on, she did her hair and she went into the workplace and she was like, I can do anything a man can?
Well, you know, it's funny because the book came out in 1979,
yeah.
And I did then travel the world in 1980 because it came out in many foreign countries.